mean, you've been putting in work for so long.
Putting a lot of work.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to Putting in Work, episode 125 of the Interview Podcast. On the 8-Bit Collective, we are powered by Audio Technica, and I'm your host, Jono Peck, here to talk to you about a jolly good old chap in England. His name is Mark Freeman, and he's someone I had the pleasure of meeting over in San Francisco at Kinda Funny Live 3 back in 2017. And a great supporter of Putting in Work. It's been a couple years of back and forth with a very long gap in the middle, but I finally brought him on the podcast to talk about overcoming his disabilities to work in a professional setting. This is really an amazing story of perseverance and overcoming some pretty big hurdles early in his childhood. Mark was diagnosed with brain damage, which led to some pretty severe ADHD as well as dyslexia and some other nasty things. But through the miracles of Ritalin and some good parenting and guidance from some medical professionals, he was able to discover that he actually had quite a high intelligence, and he was a very capable young man who founded his first business at 16 and is now a programmer, coder, designer, photographer. He's done a whole lot of cool stuff, and as you'll hear when he tells his story, has always been able to kind of push the boundaries of his comfort zone into finding more areas to work in, to find more ways to deliver a website product and expand from just kind of the coding side of it to the creative side of it, which is kind of two areas that don't always go well together, but he's found a way to do it and he's done it really well. And all this stuff is quite amazing when you look at the context of where he was as a child being expelled from school. And I don't want to give too much away. We're going to get into this, and Mark really kind of just went off and told me everything. I didn't have to ask too many questions. It was obviously something that he's thought of a lot about over the years, so it was great to kind of be the platform for him to put it out there and kind of tell his story, share his experience, really just let people know what can happen with the right guidance and the right medical treatment. So I won't talk for any longer. I'll let Mark tell the story himself. So here he is. It's Mark Freeman. Enjoy the show. Not Martin Freeman. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Been a while since KFL 3.
It has. Yes, it's just over 2 years now. So it's very lovely to hear that. I guess it's a Kent accent, yeah. Is it?
English, yeah, kind of.
English accent, yeah. I think you are my second British guest after Tom Hawkins way back in like episode 6 or 7 or something. So
yeah.
Good company.
The legend.
So he's doing good things. And we're here to talk about, I guess, you and your life and things that you've been through to get to this point. It's not, I guess, so much of a look at your career in and of itself kind of story, but I guess the things that you've overcome to get where you are. So we might start off by just letting us know what you do as a 30-something man in London area.
Yes, so I am a lead digital developer for a very large insurance company, managing the website estate, about 80 websites, etc., varying from all sorts of different types of information sites to full quote and bind to portals, data portals, and all sorts of different things. So it's not your most interesting job, but if you had told someone 30 years ago that I'd be 5 years away from paying off my mortgage and working in a professional job in London, they would have laughed you out of the room. At that point, they would have thought I would probably be dead or in prison.
Wow, okay. That's interesting.
And that's when I was 5. That would have been the year.
Wow, they wrote you off that early, yeah?
Yeah, so at 5 and 10 months, I was expelled from school. And I didn't go back until 7 and 10 months. But probably best to start a little bit earlier. Around when I was 2.
Right, let's hear it.
When I was 2, I contracted measles and got very, very ill. Please, vaccinate your children, people.
I echo those sentiments.
It effectively, I got so hot, it boiled parts of my brain.
Wow.
So I have severe brain damage, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, some short-term memory issues and a load of other stuff that kind of haven't diagnosed, but kind of a real trifecta for young education because my coordination is very poor. obviously the dyslexia as well doesn't help with the writing, and then obviously trying to do anything, I would always just get frustrated because I couldn't put the thoughts into the on the page, etc. Everyone thought I was stupid because I couldn't write anything or do anything. They put me on all sorts of different meds. There was one that made mess with my perception so much. I was on the monkey bars and I reached for, I saw a monkey bar, reached for it, it wasn't there, and went straight down and broke my arm. Yeah, and various tranquilizers and stuff like that.
Well, was all this linked back to the measles?
Yeah.
In and of itself? Yeah.
Yeah, caused all of these conditions, basically. Wow. I was fine beforehand. There was a lovely baby who slept through the night very early on. On that point, congratulations, Jono and Hannah.
Thank you, Mark. I'm
expecting. Yeah, yes. Don't expect them to sleep through the night. Seriously, get yourself prepared.
They will be vaccinated, though.
Yeah. Yeah, get yourself prepared for some fun there. But so I was, and again, I was a monster, but ADHD is a nasty, nasty thing. Basically, what it does is it convinces you doing the thing that will get you the most attention, generally negative, is exactly the right thing to do in that moment. And then you do it. But afterwards, you know it's wrong and you should never have done that. So then it racks you with guilt and all the rest of it. It is... Right. You know, you just aren't in control of your kind of actions and things.
Right. And throw that together with like the dyslexia and other things that make reading hard. Like you've got a Molotov cocktail in the classroom.
Yeah, and like my writing's so messy because my coordination's bad, so no one could read it. It's misspelt, so everyone just wrote it off.
If you're not enjoying class because you can't understand what's happening, then you're going to muck around even more.
Yeah, and then I get frustrated and then muck around even more and it cycles and, and then teachers, you know, get angry at you and all the rest of it. I must admit, I think the absolute best depiction of ADHD and students in school is probably a series that you wouldn't expect, but Summer High Time.
Right. Great show.
That Jono character and the way the two different teachers, you know, the one in the special education one treats him and tailors things to him and then he can engage and do it. And then the normal classroom one that just blames him for everything. Okay, you're doing 80% of it, but, you know, you're guilty of 100% of everything that goes wrong in the classroom. And I certainly had a lot of that even after. So, that was my early years. At 5 and 10 months, I was kicked out of school and no other school would take me. Private, Church of England schools, like schools, literally one of the schools I was talking to my mum last night, turned around and said, if you move into the area where you'll be eligible for a place, what we'll do is we'll move down kids, multiple kids from the year above so that the class is full and you can't join. So not only like buggering me over, but buggering over a load of other kids as well. Yeah. You know, it was like... I mean, yeah, I attach teachers with scissors and shit like that, you know. I mean, I'm not saying that I wasn't, you know, but you could. But for 2 years, I worked, I had a private tutor.
Right, okay.
Mrs. Page. And again, she was really, really instrumental and helped me learn things and was really great. She did things like knitting and things like that. A lot of things actually is really good, like video games and things like knitting and things. Because you're using all of your senses to do something, it actually actively fully engages your mind. So it doesn't start wandering because you're using your hands, you're using your eye, you know, you're doing all these multiple different things.
Yeah, cool.
And she was fantastic and worked with me and my mum said, you know, charged half of what she would normally, you know, and I was basically full-time with her. But then I really mushed out at my parents. My parents did a hell of a lot for me and fought and, thankfully were reasonably well off. Dad was a police officer. My mum was a police officer as well, but retired after she had my brother, or was forced out after she had my brother. While she was pregnant, she jumped in front of a flasher's car to stop him driving off to arrest him.
Jeez.
But we're talking 80s here, you know, they didn't go down well.
Okay. So when did it start to get under control for you then? Like when did there must have been a turnaround point at some stage.
The turnaround point was that my parents managed to get me into the medical trials in the UK for Ritalin.
Right. So makes sense.
I was in the first 100 people in the UK to be taking Ritalin. and actually a major part of the medical case study for the approval of use of Ritalin in the UK. I also had brain scans as well from the Great Ormond Street Hospital, so they could actively look at my brain and go, these areas are damaged, and see, you know, so that's obviously certainly in the early days, a lot of the problems with Ritalin and ADHD meds and stuff was the complete and utter misdiagnosis of people and just thinking everyone's got ADHD and just stick them on this. And, you know, this Ritalin, I'm not sure if you're quite aware of it, is effectively speed. It is a methamphetamine, which seems like completely the wrong thing to give to hyperactive children. But what it does is it rewires the brain, so so much your brain doesn't do anything. So basically it rewires your brain to use the unused brain cells to do the jobs of, in my case, the dead ones or not functioning in, you know, typical ADHD cases.
Sure.
Brain cells, and it helps everything for me. So it helps my coordination, my dyslexia, all of that lot.
So slight tangent here. How old are you, Mark?
34, 35.
Yeah, right. 34. So you're just a few years older than me. And I was going to say, I remember when I was in primary school, so we're talking like 8, 9, 10, that kind of age level, it felt like half of the kids in my class were on Ritalin for just ADD.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a period where they overprescribed in reaction to maybe the success of trials like the one you were in. Do you have any recollection of other kids being on Ritalin and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, Professor Taylor was the person running it, so out of the Maudsley Hospital. So I went for regular checkups there and was in the waiting rooms with them and stuff. But yeah, no, I was aware, and a lot of people got quite a stigma. And I mean, they just got a new pharmacist down at the pharmacy. And obviously I am actually now, my dose actually exceeds the recommended dosage because I've been on so long, and, you know, I've been on it longer than anyone else in the country, pretty much. I built up a tolerance to it, so my doses has gone up over time. And she was like, oh, does it help? You know, and was like, really kind of like, he still thought it was kind of bullshit kind of thing. And that was the pharmacist. And I was like, no, this absolutely 100% does it. I was in the medical trial, you know, it makes a massive difference. And, you know, I can tell, and you can certainly tell if I haven't taken my tablets, you know, it will be very different. I'll become very animated, you know, stay daft things, you know.
Like you're drunk.
Yes, so yeah.
Which I've seen. So
yes, but also that was, so I mean, that's a good point. You know, when we first met in the Wingwins and then the wine bar in, I'd been up for I think 36 hours and 30 hours of solid drinking by that point. I'd been through two doses of my med,
right?
But that was at the tail end. Obviously, the major problem with it is amphetamine based, so you have to come off it at some point in order to then be able to get to sleep in like 4 hours time. So you have to, you know, and otherwise you just lay in bed and your mind is just fully alert.
Okay.
And it's nasty. So yeah, it does mess with your sleep. So yes, whilst I was also drunk, I was. That's often the good thing that. Well, those stages, if you're out drinking, people just assume that you're drunk as opposed to necessarily it's the ADHD or whatever. It's
kind That's of, good to know.
Master in social situations. And I mean, normally I will, you know, medicate, but that obviously was one where it was 36 hours away to get over.
Sure. So as you're going through high school, and I guess it's becoming closer to the point of career opportunities.
Yeah, once I got onto the meds, then bit after I managed then to get back into primary school, and they used to take me in there, and I had to go down to the nurse's office and have my tablets in a jelly bag and go and take them at regular intervals and things like that. Fortunately, now I'm on there's something called Concerta, so it's slow release. So at that time, though, I was having to take it like 4 or 5 or 6 times a day at intervals, and obviously if I missed the dose, then I would start acting out or whatever. And this time now I've just got the ones that I just take in the morning, and then the Ritalin that I take of an evening to top me up or whatever if I'm going out or doing something or whatever. So, so I managed to get into school, but obviously still there was everyone, you know, it wasn't a particularly large town. No one wanted me in their class. Everyone, you know, had heard the horror stories, and the stigma really did follow me all the way through primary school, you know,
the Scissors Kid.
At which point and obviously I still wasn't, I missed a lot of school as well. So, you know, whilst I, you know, I scored 100% on my maths 11 plus, which is like the grammar school test, and did quite well on the English one as well, you know, like real top percentile stuff. But I still don't know my timetables because I wasn't in school or wasn't, you know, of things that I don't know the alphabet. I struggled with the alphabet.
Right.
Just because, it, you know, as a kid, you get those things drilled into you, and I wasn't necessarily a receptive thing to have those things drilled in and learn like so many kids. So there's still plenty of things. And I then went to the local grammar school, and that was when I started. And then I started using a laptop to type out my, do all of my work on. Very early days, some Amstrad with a green screen and all the rest of it. And again, that kind of, I at that grammar, the Harvey Grammar School in Folkestone, and I got heavily bullied because of it. And again, anything goes wrong. I was, you know, number of times I got detention for being bullied. And then just, there were several instances where, you know, physical harm and stuff like that was done to me and things like that. And I still ended up getting in trouble. The teachers were awful. And that ended when a kid put a chair leg in my eye.
Oh.
And the school didn't even send me to the hospital or anything. They just put me back in lessons. And when my parents found out, they were absolutely thoroughly upset. And we looked for, it was right towards the end of term, the end of the year, thankfully. And then we looked for other schools, and we found a school called in Cranbrook in Kent, which is where I now live, which is a state boarding grammar school.
Right.
So it has boarders, but it's not a private school with tuition, etc. So it was a very interesting school. You have a lot of expat kids, people, you know. So we had a, you know, for a very small Kentish town, we had a extremely diverse group of, you know, races and religions and everything. You know, it was a real melting pot school, which was fantastic. And they had a very good special needs program there, and some great teachers like Professor Sykes as well, who was like my house tutor, you know, who really fought for me, you know, and helped me and made sure that I had all of the tools that I needed to get through. And I did extremely well at GCSE and A-level and got into one of the best universities in the country, Warwick, for computer science.
Hmm.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, many years ago, the fact of university, I was speaking to my mum last night, and she was like, well, Dad was working out that he could retire after 25 years. So basically when I was 16 and could open a bike shop and like try and give me some employment that way, that was their plan, you know, just to do something with me, you know, and have me kind of employed and basically just prop me up kind of thing. And, but no, yeah, thankfully, you know, the medication really made a difference in my case. As we say, was heavily oversubscribed, and you know, people weren't properly diagnosed and all the rest of it. It was just considered a, you know, kind of became that fix all, just give the, you know, the kids acting up for whatever reasons because the parents completely ignore him. Oh well, you know, these drugs will help. Well, no, they won't, because it's not ADHD, it's that, you know, whatever other problems or, you know, situation or whatever problems and things like that. But for me, it does make such a huge difference and still does to this day. But again, I wouldn't say, obviously, there's not, I still don't have flare-ups and issues and things like that, and still do things out, you know, in particular late at night and things like that, where, you know, I can get very frustrated and things. But I've built a tool set where I can now notice, like, I'm basically, the minute I'm doing a lot of hand movements and things like that, I can spot the signs of where my meds are wearing off or whatever, because it is kind of like a health bar or whatever in a computer, a shield bar in a computer game or whatever. If they do end up with a lot of stress, it will just use up the dosage in the body, and then you have to take some more and things like that. So
it's interesting.
Unfortunately, university wasn't a particularly great time because it was up in Coventry, where my my family are actually from, where my mum's actually from. And this was during the point where my auntie that I was very close to contracted cancer and slowly died.
Right.
And that really messed up. And then when I went back for my retakes, I was meant to be staying with my grandmother and we found her dead on the floor on arrival.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, that kind of messed up, and you know, it wasn't fantastic, and you know, but I came back and I looked around at what I wanted to do, which was, so when I was 16, I actually founded my first company and started designing websites and building websites and maintaining a website for an estate agent. That was our bread and butter. So uploading the properties every week and stuff like this. This is back before CMSs existed. You know?
That would be, have to be the early days of the internet.
We're
as
talking
well.
Dreamweaver and Flash. Yeah. We're talking, yeah, pure HTML and stuff like that. Yeah. So I was lucky to be involved from a very early age on that. And whilst, you know, I've been talking about the negatives of the ADHD and things, it is also can give you a hell of a lot of focus and things like that. And especially on something that you can, you know, you're interested in. I'm just natural with computers and code. And can just sit there and write code and, you know, do things. It's just something I just taught myself and learned, and it's just something I've always found very easy to pick up new things and skills around computers, and particularly, you know, what was the macromedia stuff, which is now all in Adobe, is now the Adobe suite, etc. So yeah, I started doing that, and at the time I was really into Flash websites and things like that. I looked around at all of the jobs that I wanted to do, and pretty much everything said 2 years worked experience. And then some of them said degrees. It was like, why am I now going to spend the next 2 years getting this degree, which is only going to get me, you know, the...
half the job.
Yeah. And I won't then have any experience. You know, I won't have the work to do. Why not just find a job and get the experience? So I got a job with an entrepreneur who owned many different businesses, very interesting things, from koi farms to properties in Portugal, you know, the pubs and all sorts of things. So basically doing his web estate for him was very interesting, you know, and very varied. I set up like the point of sale system in their koi shop and things like this, and did all sorts of things, went down the pubs, did all the photography of them, and then you know, built the websites for them, etc., and built templates so I could bang out websites very quickly and easily. But obviously for him it was, well, it wasn't necessarily a full-time amount of work. It made a hell of a lot of sense for him to pay me as opposed to contracting out each individual bit, because it would have cost way more than my wages. So
is this while you were at university or after?
No, this was after. So I left university. I got that job in the summer and went, yeah, sod university. I'm just going to get the experience and work through, obviously. So, yeah. And so that led to, well, it wasn't particularly fulfilling. The sites that I was doing weren't all that great. I was looking to try and build my portfolio. So that led on to another little hobby of mine, the photography. Because again, as I say, he needed me to do all of this stuff. It was way cheaper for him to just employ me but it wasn't really, you know, I had loads of free time at work, you know, I needed to be able to do what he needed whenever he wanted, but it did mean, so I was looking around trying to do find, you know, people to do portfolios, to do nice, you know, build my portfolio of sites with something, you know, that looks a bit cooler than koi fish or whatever, you know, or some pub down the road kind of thing. I started off trying to do like some indie bands that I knew and, you know, unsigned kind of things. It was like, great, you know, they'll have pictures and things and, you know, we can really have sounds and all the rest of it. You know, you can build a decent website. But the problem was that was designed by committee and nothing ever happened. So I went on to Yahoo Answers again. This is really dating when this was. And looked for people looking for websites. And I found models, and there are a load of models that wanted to, you know, have their own portfolio websites. And I was like, brilliant. But like 99% of the stuff at the time was, you know, a good photo would make a website. So I was like, brilliant. They're going to have good photos or whatever. So I built a template one and I built many, many sites. I got it down to an art where I could actually turn them around in about 5 minutes. Like built like automatic processing, resizing of the images that they sent me, that then just renamed them all, and the gallery just picked them up, and it was like various different templates, swap out the images, bash done, you know, drop in the text that they provided.
It sounds like you've been really driven to just do as much as you can, like
a
pretty wide variety of things from the webs, like the web stuff through to the more creative side of it as well. So do you feel like the ADD or that, sorry, the ADHD is a part of kind of wanting to do a lot and being driven to kind of propel yourself forward?
Yeah, I would. I mean, but it also does give me a very visually led mind. So that really helps with a lot of the creative elements. You know, I can see things before, you know, and then see how to make them on computers. When it comes to putting them onto a, you know, drawing them on a bit of paper, that's when things fall apart and, you know. But with a mouse and keyboard, I can do many things. And basically from that, one of my friends became homeless and was living on, you know, on a mattress in my room at the time, and was like, I wouldn't mind being a model. And she's 16, and it was like, okay, whatever. So I borrowed my parents' holiday digital camera, and she was a goth, went around to the local churchyard and did a load of things and pulled them into Macromedia and like messed with them and did stuff. And I showed them around to like the models of that genre that I built websites for, and they were all like, oh, this is really good. So I started doing it. I did a few shoots with that, and then I bought a Prosum, a fixed lens camera, but you know, SLR type camera, and ended up working with over 100 different models over several years, and working at all sorts of different levels of photography as well. All of it was time for print, and so I no money exchange hands between either of us, so they weren't charged, and they didn't charge me and I didn't charge them. But having built the websites, I was able to tailor what I offered to be exactly what they needed, because I'd listened to all of the pain points that they've got, like, oh, the photographer, you know, I'm waiting for the photographer to give me the images, you know, he did a shoot 3 weeks ago, I'm meant to be sending them, he hasn't sent them, oh, he's editing the photos, then he's picked the photos that he wanted to, he's done the edits on this one, but I hate how I look in this photo. I tell you what,
make the model happy.
Being a modeling photographer, ladies have stuff that you that they hate about themselves that you would never guess in a million years. You know, like they've all got something where it's like, So, you know, they would edit the ones that they liked, and then the photographers would, and then obviously the models didn't like them. So the way I did it was, you come, you shoot with me. If you've got the time, you stay with me afterwards, and we edit photos together. You shoot, you know, I learn what you don't. We edit a load of them together. You go to all of the images and you delete any that you don't like, and they're just gone, including whole sets. If you, you know, as I had many people, you know, playing with their levels, i.e. generally nudity or lack of clothes or whatever, and things like that. And it was always like, I will shoot what you want. You know, that was always the same thing. I had zero requirements about anything, you know, any levels or anything to come shoot with me. But a lot of girls, you know, I did a lot of people's first shoots and things like that, and they would do things and then go, actually, no, I don't want to do topless. So it was just like bin the whole shoot or whatever. Right. So they would go through it and I'd edit them and they'd leave with the disc, which was the main thing. And then I'd do further edits afterwards and send them through. But then I knew exactly their issues and what they wanted photoshopped out and what they didn't want photoshopped out and all of the rest of it. So
when you're doing so much of that, did it ever cross your mind to focus on that as a career option, or were you not interested in that as a as a business?
I mean, I would, but the problem is the monetization of it just doesn't sit right with me. You know, you either get really lucky and manage to get yourselves in with publications and become their photographers, but that is like a long shot, a ridiculously, you know, and you have to know the right people and all the rest of it.
And you didn't want to charge the models.
I didn't. It's preying on people's hopes and dreams is how I felt, you know.
Right.
And, you know, they're forking out all this money. And there's plenty of people that would do it like me, you know, time for print and all the rest of it. You could do it. So it didn't sit right with me. I enjoyed it. It was fantastic. And I met some great friends. I'm godfather to one of their children now, and you know, lots of them. Yeah, I had one of them come for Christmas for about 6 years and things like that. So yeah, I made a lot of great friends about it, and I learned all of my Photoshop skills, which obviously then goes back into the websites and things like that. And I sometimes take the headshots at work and things like that. So I learned a lot of skills and all the rest of it, which then translate back into my work. And then also then I'm kind of also a graphic designer as well as a coder, which is fairly rare in the web space. You kind of go down the one track or the other. So the fact that I can literally, and I did, you know, build sites from, I designed the web, you know, I sat with a business, designed it, you know, built all the assets, you know, coded it, put it all together, tested it, all of that, you know, without having to go and spend thousands of pounds on a design agency to design something, which then you then have to, you know, take their assets and chop them all up and implement them. So yeah, no, it was really useful, and it, you know, built a breadth of skills, and as I say, it was a fantastic experience, you know, and, you know, I made a lot of very good friends out of it, and, you know, helped some people as well, helped some people get started.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's good to feel part of something like that, and I guess doing it for, I guess, a motivation that's not purely financial or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, I probably haven't focused on a lot of the, you know, like Mrs. Page and Professor Taylor and Mr. Sykes, who really helped me as a kid, you know. I appreciated that, and I always like, if I've got the opportunity to give back to someone, I really want to, because, you know, I wouldn't be there if it wasn't for those people, you know, going out of their way and, you know, doing something that wasn't necessarily in certainly with Paige's interest. She was like taking off as much as she normally would, you know, she literally, you know, took a pay cut in order to help me, you know, because she was so incensed by the fact that all the schools wouldn't take me, or she was a retired teacher, you know, and was like, no, well, okay, fine, I'll solve this and get him an education, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do always like to try and give back and, you know, help people.
So I guess the past 31 or so minutes that we've been talking, the sense that I'm getting is that, you know, you had all these experiences as a childhood, and you mentioned as a five-year-old people predicted that you'd be in prison or dead. But the fact of the matter is you've done a lot with your life, and you've been successful without wanting to brag too much. I can see that, you know, you've been successful, and you've set your mind on a multitude of different tasks in different areas, from management of different things.
But I mean, I didn't expect to. I mean, even after I was on the tablets, I really didn't expect to live off past 29. I mean, taking this amount of amphetamines can't necessarily be healthy for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had recent blood pressure. And there are a lot of things, whilst, you know, I say this, you know, I think there are a lot of things that I don't think I could do. You know, I don't think kids are in my future, because, you know, being woken up at 6 a.m. in the morning, I'm not going to be medicated. You know, I'm not sure I could trust myself in those situations, you know, or being a, you know, things like that. So, yeah. And yeah, as I say, I was always like the rock and roll age to die 29. It was always like things pretty much up until I got to 29 and then just carried on. And now, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward 5 years till I've got the house paid off and, you know, things like that. But
that's really cool, though.
It is still there, and it is still restrictive of things like I can't drive late at night and things like that because of the tablet.
But I mean, it seems like you know what your limits are, which is great, and you know what you can overcome and what's not worth the risk, like something like fatherhood or, you know, driving late at night. Like, you know, it's not worth the risk to others, to yourself, but you know that you're not going to use it as an excuse not to do these things that you know that you can accomplish, which is pretty amazing, I think, for what you've achieved.
Yeah, no, I must admit, it's if you showed those people back there that wrote me off, they would be absolutely shocked. And I think my parents, you know, as I say, they were very happy with how it's turned out. They were expecting, you know, have to retire early and try and put me up. But yeah, I just, computers speak to me kind of thing, and it's just managed to, as I say, making money off them since I was 16. Best bit was I was exempt from the foreign languages, but obviously had to go to class, so I sat at the front of my German lesson. I think one lesson I made 48 quid. Updating the estate agent's website, sat in the German lesson. I had to attend the lesson, but obviously I wasn't doing the lesson, so I just sat there doing my website. Probably the only person who got anything out of those lessons, to be honest. feature wasn't fantastic.
Where do you think you would be if it wasn't for the Ritalin at this point?
Dead or in prison is the easy answer. I mean,
yeah. So you agree with those people that were?
Yeah, and out of the hunt. So my mum said, you know, we spoke to Professor Taylor years later, and he was like, "Oh, do you keep track of the kids?" And he was like, "Yeah, I'm keeping track of the original 100. It's very easy because a large portion of them are serving at Her Majesty's pleasure, you know, in prison." So yeah, I mean, and my parents to be able to, you know, make sure I took the meds and worked through, and you know, I was. Even with them, it took a long time for me now, you know, to, especially when I was taking the dosages, you know, I'd miss dosages and then start acting out and things like that. So until kind of the slow release came along, which kind of really helps, you know, because it covers that bulk of the day.
So it wasn't as simple as just they put you on Ritalin. There was still a lot of involved in using it in the right way that obviously it didn't pan out for the other kids.
Yeah. And you have to, you know, you have to have people to make sure that you're taking it and all the rest of it and have the support structure and all the rest of it and be able to handle you when you're not on it and you're acting out. And as you know, I'm a fairly large person and I'm pretty much this height from about 12 or whatever, you know, so.
Right. That's scary.
I was very, very thin. My mum used to have to force feed me Mars bars and stuff because obviously it's amphetamine or whatever and it's appetite suppressant or whatever. But until I found beer and that all just went out. I was fairly low, you know, and acting out violently and things like that, you have to know what you're doing and all the rest of it. I mean, obviously, police officers, so that helped.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds like you are surrounded by the right people.
Yeah, and I mean, I could probably handle it now because obviously I've learnt the tools and self-aware enough. But as a 10-year-old kid to know that you've missed your dose, you know, and to be able to spot this, it's nowhere near as easy as an adult, you know.
Sure.
To be able to do those things. So it wasn't, you know, but it was such a massive difference. And obviously, as I say, you did really well in the 11th last, did really well at GCSE, loads of A stars and A levels, AAB, I think it was, you know, maths and all the rest of it, really, you know. So, and then, so worked for the entrepreneur for a while, then worked for a small caravan insurance company for 5 years, building their quote and buy system. And the white labeling system around that, so basically sending it out as different brands but the same quote system and the same stuff behind it, and then I moved over to Gallagher, where I am now, and we've moved up there in the digital space to the top, and looking to build out a team this year of developers under me and stuff, so exciting times. Excellent. Ahead, you know, and
look at you now.
I mean, it's there for the grace of God, you know, a million different things didn't happen, you know, things would have probably turned out very, very differently for me. So, you know, and my parents being very dogged to try and find me the right thing, you know, the right solutions for me was, you know, so many other people would have given up, and you know, they spent a hell of a lot of time and effort driving me around to all sorts of different places and all the rest of it, but you know, and going to these doctors and getting these meds that burn out completely and utterly send me completely crazy or whatever, but you know, we have to find it. Obviously things are a lot better these days, and you know, there's a lot better diagnosis and stuff like that. And you know, brain scans are a lot more common and things like that. So I mean, there was one for kids in the UK, which was at Great Ormond Street Hospital. I went and got it, and I was having the brain scan, and I needed a piss halfway through it there, because it took 40 minutes back in those days to do a brain scan. You know, what is it, like 4 minutes now or whatever? You know, so I'm sat there a little trays up. I couldn't move at all. It was, you know, so things are, you know, a lot better now for people coming to this, but they will still need people to, you know, look out for them and be there and help them. And you know, there is a way through and you can lead a life. So you know, if that's the great one thing I can, you know, give to people is some hope that going through similar things, I'll, you know, very happy to. There is light at the end of the tunnel if you work for it.
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a bit. It's time to ask the questions that you might think are pretty familiar to the show if you've listened for a while, but What would you say has been the hardest part of getting to where you are? Like, what's been the hardest thing to overcome on this journey that you've been on through, whether it's all the bullying, whether it's like education or what?
Stigma, yeah. So certainly in the early years, the stigma of it that you just carried around. I wasn't that person anymore. I wasn't acting out that much. Yeah, I was still but everything was always my fault. Anything happened between me and someone else, it was always my fault. Yeah. You know,
reputation. Yeah.
Assume, doesn't matter if they've put a chair in my. It's my fault. I should have got to the school. He should have got out of the way. Were the words that they said. And again, I do always have to, be very upfront about it. And I must admit, my work are fantastic about it all. And always like any of the additional doctor stuff that I have to go to, they're fine. So I'm going in a couple of weeks. And it's actually not that far from work. So I'm basically doing half a day and then going off to the hospital, which is good. And again, that's been very helpful that I'm still under the main hospital for this thing in the UK. Okay. And still got, psychiatric care or whatever, but, with a professor and all the rest of it, and properly look after and make sure my meds. So I've had some issues with blood pressure. I had some issues with blood pressure and, 6 months back or whatever. I made some life, because my doctor was then got a bit worried about prescribing me the dosage that I was getting, because it is like 90 milligrams of pure amphetamines each day. It's quite a lot, especially when you're doing. So I made some lifestyle changes and got back into the exercising and stuff, and I've got it back down to normal now and lost a load of weight and all the rest of it. So I was like, I don't want to be going on blood medication and heart meds, and you never get off those things, do you, and all the rest of it. So there's been lots of hard things, but and just being able to know your worth and all the rest of it after so many years of people saying you're worthless and all the rest of it. But I'm very pleased with how I've managed to get through and out and on.
Yeah, definitely. I can imagine a lot of people would struggle with that for a very long time, and they might never get to a good place, but it seems like you are. So that's, credit to you and credit to, I guess your parents as well.
Yeah, I mean, there were years, where I was very depressed and suicidal and things around it. And, it was actually my 16th birthday, this whole story of where I went to New York and everything went wrong. It's fantastic. I came back out as literally a comedy movie. Everything that can go wrong went wrong, and just a complete nightmare. But I came back and I was reading Terry Pratchett at the time, the This World novels. Have you read them by Terry Pratchett?
No, I haven't.
But basically, like the first few, the gods are playing chess risk with the main character and like throwing things. And it was like, either God doesn't exist or he's a bastard and this is going on. You could either curl up in a ball and cry about it or just laugh along. And that was kind of where I lost my faith, but also kept on and kept the good parts of, the moral teachings, etc. But chucked out the rest. And I mean, there was a lot of, the church was less than good to me as well. A lot of the people in the church, the non-tea towel people, as my grandmother would use, the people that were always out the front but never had a tea towel in the hand, never did the washing up, that were very, very nasty and went out of their way to try and, exclude me from anything and everything, every party and all the rest of it. So
not very Christ-like, is it?
No, exactly. Not Christ-like in the slightest, and want all the glory but never do any of the work and all the rest of it. But so that was kind of the real changing point in my life, where it's like, just learn to laugh along or it's gonna kill you kind of thing. And and try and be the good that you want to see from others. Don't mean it, help others and it'll come back to you, and it has, and I'll always try and go out of my way to help people and do things.
I've seen that firsthand. Giving out
sunscreen at Kind of Funny Lives or whatever it is, organising things or, even the small things. But, it makes you a lot of friends and people, now that are there for me when I'm having hard times, and I'm there for them when they're having hard times. So
you touched on before, I guess, a message of some hope. So what is your advice to, whether it's parents with kids who are going through behavioral issues, or maybe it's, I guess, grown-ups who have battled with ADHD all their life and they haven't been able to get to the point that you're at?
Parents with kids, don't accept the first diagnosis. Fight and try and find the right thing. You know, there are so many different things on the spectrums. You know, there are so many different things like ADHD, autism, you know, all the different spectrum stuff. Chances are the first meds you get put on are going to be wrong. You know, if they're just kind of working, look for other, you know, don't settle. Kind of try and find experts within the field and fight for your kids and fight for them to find the right thing. There are so many things out there that, you know, and proper, be it behavioral support or special schools or things like that. So I went to a special dyslexic school for a couple of terms, which really gave me a lot of tools around the dyslexia to overcome the, you know, get around the dyslexia and rework myself that way. You know, that was very helpful. It can be behavioral, you know, psychological, you know, therapy or medical. You know, there are lots of different ways depending on what it is, and try and get that diagnosis right. You know, try and get someone to get that diagnosis right, because it will help the person going forwards as new things come out and new meds come out and new things come out that, you know, so many people are misdiagnosed. That is the, you know, and then just carry on those kind of treatment plans or whatever for the wrong thing.
Yeah, it's definitely always kind of a small tragedy when people are led to believe that they've got something that they don't have, whether it's, you know, depression or whether it's ADHD, autism, whatever it might be.
You
hear these stories of people being treated for something, even schizophrenia, when it turns out it's some other mental health or something else.
Or something issue. Or, you know, a brain tumor or something, you know.
Yeah.
But then they don't look for, you know. So, yeah, it is hard, but, you know, keep going until you find the thing that works, you know, the things that work for your kids, you know, and never give up. It will be a very hard process. And, you know, I am so thankful that my parents spent so much time, money, and driving me around so many different places to get, you know, dyslexia diagnosis came after the meds as well, but she gave me a verbal IQ test. And then I got hurt from that. I was given automatic membership to Mensa. Up until this point, everyone thought I was thick as two short planks because I couldn't put it on the paper, you know, and she was instrumental in then going, right, okay, so what you need is to get him a laptop and this, not so he's not having to deal with the writing where it's both the coordination and the dyslexia and all the rest of it, and you've got spell check on the laptop and things like that, you know. So I used the laptop throughout all of my education afterwards, and that was instrumental in, you know, being able, you know, made such a difference, because, you know, poorly spelt, barely legible, you know, just gets written off. So, but nice typed out and printed, you know, sheet of paper with that then being run through spell check is just a world of difference, you know.
Yeah, I guess the education system's come so far since then as well to accept and understand these things.
Yeah, and then when I moved up to Cranbrook School as well, they had a special needs support system there. I went to once a week, and they worked on. They were fantastic, and Cranbrook School is a fantastic school, you know, and really was, you know, the change. So even though, you know, I wasn't doing well at the Harvey because of all the bullying and all the rest of it, and I was depressions and all that, I was just making myself ill just so I didn't go, so I wouldn't have to go to school to, you know, face it all and all the rest of it. And you came up here and it was fantastic, and it was just, you know, they really went out of the way. They had a zero tolerance on bullying and all the rest of it. You know, they didn't, the school was based, the Harvey was just trying to sweep it all under the rug. They didn't want to say, you know, they didn't want to accept that anything was going on. Cranbrook were always very proactive about it and great, and, you know, work with their, you know, special needs people and all the rest of it to get it, and, you know, and I got them good grades as a result, you know, did help their league tables and all the rest of it. But it's find the right people as well, you know, those people that care, that will help you, is so important.
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely see that, whether it's mental health or actual, like, physical health, definitely helps to be seeing the right people. So, Mark, last question for you, then I'll let you go. If you could do anything and know you wouldn't fail, what would you do?
Work at Rockstar Games.
Work at Rockstar Games.
Because of the, and not fail, because I don't want to be the person who made the trees in GTA 4. I'm not sure if you can remember, but like GTA 4 was fantastic, but the trees were just off. And I'm not skilled enough. My skill set like doesn't overlap with Rockstar Games. It's different languages and things like that, you know, and game development. But yeah, that would be my ideal job if I knew I could do it and do it to the standard that it deserves. Because, that is, you know, they are got to say the highest quality game studio out there. The games that they produce
it's definitely hard to argue.
Because their worlds are built by hand. You know, however massive they are, everything, you know, they have committees where you have to justify, you get a square of land and you have to justify the placement of every rock or tree or whatever is in that bit of the world that you're responsible for, you know. And they take 6 years to make games, you know, as opposed to other people's two or three, and but then they make the huge money is when they come out. But I'm not skilled enough to do that, but if I magically was, that would obviously be the job that I'd love to do.
That was one of the things that I always said about the whole like overtime and crunch with Rockstar and Red Dead 2 is when your name's on that masterpiece in the credits, I think that everyone kind of knew what they were signing up for. Whether you believe that it's okay to work people that hard or not, it's kind of a different issue.
I mean, I have in my current job, I have done crunch to the level of video game development on certain things. There was times when I was, you know, deliver certain things, I was working, you know, nearly 60, 70 hours a week for months to deliver a key project. You know, in any program field, I think I know a lot of people talk about video games and the rest of it, but you will find in a lot of programming and things like that, there are deadlines and the things, and you go through crunch. I don't think necessarily it's often can be quite as long as games can be.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's probably the out thing. But it's finding a good work-life balance, and, you know, I've worked with my bosses, you know, and we changed things and, you know, got back to a decent, you know, thing and now and all the rest of it. But I think, it's kind of got to be, you've got to speak up and look out for your health. It's not healthy. It will will have a huge detriment to you. I saw it myself and, you know.
Yeah, you got to know your limits.
When I was going through it, you got to know your limits, and you just lose all life, because you are literally only working and sleeping. So,
thanks, Mark. It's been great to hear your story, and thank you for opening up and being so, I guess, honest and earnest about your experiences. Yeah. I think that hopefully, there are people out there that maybe they've had a similar experience, or it speaks to people that they knew growing up. Maybe it explains why that kid in class was the way they were, you know.
Yeah, I am always, you know, I don't shy away from the dark stuff. I do like to try and live my life out there and, like, talk to people about it, even the very difficult things in my life and all the rest of it, because if it can just help one person, you know, improve, I think that's well worth doing. And thankfully, a lot of time and all the rest has passed with me now, so that, you know, I'm not, you know, it's not so painful to bring up these things and all the rest of it. So, hopefully I am, inspired some people, helped some people, or gave some people a different change of opinion on, kids or whatever.
Yeah, very good. All right, well, thanks again for coming on.
Cool.
Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to Audio Technica, of course. You can catch Mark on Twitter at TheIndieBoy1. That's INDIE number one. Say hello, and of course you can support this podcast with an iTunes rating and review to get the word out there, help out with the algorithms, and then head over to patreon.com/weare8bit to support this podcast as part of the 8-bit collective. From as little as $1 a month, you can take part in our swag giveaways, access to the fortnightly 8-bit cast, and help bring the Comedy Rewind podcast to life. As always, you can catch me on social media at Johnny himself. And until next week, keep putting in work.